गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि वो श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाए। नमः ओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाए। Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Sunday great. I hope everybody had a nice break, good rest. So, first, an announcement that Guru Maharaj will be leading the kirtans again at the temple group at 7 o'clock. And secondly, once again, everybody, right hands up. People, left knees, left hands up. Properties, hands in your pocket, Mataji's, hands in your handbags. Take out your mobile phones. You may think that you've switched them off. Maybe you have. Please switch them off. Hindi ke mathe ko kripa karke, please aap sab ka mobile phone leke off kijiye. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mukunda Hari. Hare Krishna. Okay, so today, in the morning, we discussed about Prithu Maharaj's descendants. Who is an illustrious descendant of... I'm sorry, Dhruva Maharaj's descendants. Who is an illustrious descendant of Dhruva Maharaj? Prithu Maharaj. He is actually an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was a Shaktavesh avatar. How many of you know how many different types of incarnations are there? Okay, let me make it a little more easier. How many of you know that what are the six different types of incarnations of the Lord? Raise your hands. How many of you don't know? And how many of you want to know? Okay. The six different types of incarnations of the Lord are Purushavatars. The Purushavatars are three Vishnus. Karanadokshai Vishnu or Mahavishnu, Garbhodokshai Vishnu and Kshirodokshai Vishnu. The Kshirodokshai Vishnu is the super soul of all the living entities, and Garbhodokshai Vishnu, you can say, is the super soul of the universe. And Mahavishnu is the originator of the material creation. There are three Vishnus. The Vishnus are the expansions of the Lord in relation to the material creation. When the Lord decides to create, then He expands Himself as Vishnu. And there are three Vishnus. Original one is Mahavishnu, then Garbhodokshai Vishnu, then Kshirodokshai Vishnu. Then there are three Gunavatars. They are Vishnu, Brahma and Lord Shiva. As Vishnu, He controls the mode of goodness. As Brahma, He controls the mode of passion. And as Lord Shiva, He controls the mode of ignorance. Then there are four Jugavatars. There are four Jugas, and four Jugas, to establish the Juga Dharma, the Lord appears as the Jugavatar. Therefore, Jugavatars. Then there are different Leelavatars. The Lord performs his pastimes, Leelas, as an incarnation of the Supreme Person. He incarnates to perform various pastimes. So that is Leelavatars. Like Lord Ramchandra, Varahadev, Nrisingha, Kurma, they are the Leelavatars. And then there are Manvantar avatars. The reign of Manus, during the reign of each Manu, the Lord descends and remains during that period of Manu's reign as Manvantar avatar. And then Shaktavesh avatar. The Lord empowers someone to accomplish some special mission. So that is his Shaktavesh avatar. Like Vasudev, Prithu Maharaj, Parashuram, they are the Manvantar avatars. They are the Shaktavesh avatars. So how many you got? Okay, so how many different types of incarnations of the Lord are there? Now how many of you know? How many of you are still thinking? Whether you know or do not know? Okay. So in this way, Prithu Maharaj was a Shaktavesh avatar. So Prithu Maharaj's son was Vijitashya, and he had another name called Antariksha. You remember why he got the name Vijitashya? Because he defeated Indra when Indra was stealing the horse for the 100th sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj. Then Antardhan's son was Havirdhan. So these are all illustrious personalities, very powerful kings, the monarchs of this world. And Havirdhan had 6 sons headed by Prachina Barhi. This Prachina Barhi was very much involved in performing sacrifices for material enjoyment. So, who become involved in sacrifices generally? Those who want to enjoy the material nature. The purpose of this sacrifice or karmakanda is to enjoy this material nature. And Prachina Barhi had 10 sons. Those 10 sons are known as Prachetas. So now you see, I hope you are getting the whole picture. Yeah? Like it's not just some stories from here and there. It's a genealogical table. The line, Brahma to Sayambhuva Manu, Manu to Priyavrata, Uttanapad, then Dhruva Maharaj, then Dhruva Maharaj's sons, and this way the line is coming down to Vena, and from Vena came Prithu Maharaj, and now Prithu Maharaj's, from Prithu Maharaj, sons, Prithu Maharaj's descendants. Prithu Maharaj's son is Bijitashya or Antardhan. Santardhan's son was headed by Habirdhan, and Habirdhan's son was Prachinabarhi, and Prachinabarhi's sons are the Prachetas. So, not that everyone's reign here is being described or everyone's personality is characterized. Only the illustrious ones are mentioned. Just as we see in our Guru Parampara, in our disciplic succession. Only so many are there. But in between there are many others, but they haven't been mentioned. Only the prominent ones are mentioned. So here also we see how the prominent ones are being mentioned. So, although Bijitashya is the son of Prithu Maharaj, he is mentioned, but he is not detailed descriptions were given by him. He is also a great personality. And his son, Antardhan's son, Habirdhan, is also great. Prachinabarhi is also great. Prachinabarhi is briefly mentioned here. But now it's coming to one very, very illustrious personalities. And they are the Prachetas. So Prachetas' characters and activities have been described quite elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are 10 brothers, and they were told to procreate by his father. Now you're grown up, get married, and maintain your family. The purpose of getting married is to procreate children. But they considered that in order to fulfill that responsibility, we have to become qualified. And in order to qualify themselves, they decided to go and perform austerities, which means meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, controlling the senses. Generally, the senses are running outward, externally, towards the material objects. But the senses have to be fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. Time and time again, that point is being established in the Vedic culture. Generally, for a conditioned soul, in the material nature, his senses are running towards the objects of the senses, externally. Dhyate vishayan pungsha, as Krishna pointed out in Bhagavad Gita. Dhyate vishayan pungsha sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kamo kamat krodho vijayate. Gradually how one becomes more and more entangled. You allow your senses to run towards the objects of the senses, dhyate vishayan puksha, and as a result of that, attachment develops. Sangaste shupajayate. And from attachment comes desire for enjoyment. Sangat sanjayate kama. And kamat krodho vijayate, from lust or for this desire, for intense desire for enjoyment, develops anger. So in this way, gradually a living entity becomes entangled in the material nature, and finally smriti bhrangshat buddhi nasho buddhi nashat pranashyati, is destroyed. Destroyed here means doomed. The soul doesn't get destroyed, but he is doomed. So that is the condition of the living entities in the material nature. So how to save oneself from this degrading condition? The way to save oneself from the degrading condition is by being fixed up at the lotus feet of Krishna. So that is why we see that personalities are going out to perform austerities. But Srila Prabhupada pointed out, dry austerities are not going to lead us to Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, Krishna consciousness will naturally detach us from material attachments. That is higher taste. By getting the higher taste, we give up the lower taste. And as we become attached to Krishna, the more we become detached from matter. Now apparently it seems that they are becoming detached from matter, but it is happening naturally due to their Krishna consciousness. Like we notice that when one becomes Krishna conscious, he naturally loses his tendency to enjoy this material nature. Like we notice that the devotees, don't you see? I mean, didn't you experience the frivolous involvements? You automatically give up, you lose taste for that. Like before you became devotees, you used to do so many things, and then after becoming devotees, you just stopped going doing those things. Like you used to go out for recreation, you used to indulge in all kinds of silly activities. But now, do you do that? No. Why? Because you have become. You got the higher taste through Krishna consciousness. But those who are watching you from outside, they'll say, oh, he has become so austere. Do you see, he has become so austere. He stopped eating meat. He became a vegetarian. He stopped taking alcohol. He stopped taking all kinds of intoxication, including tea and coffee. It's such austerity. But do you feel it, that this is an austerity? No. At the beginning it may have been some austerity. There may have been some difficulty. I find that people find giving up some bad habits to be difficult. But after a while it becomes easy. Why it becomes easy? Because you got the higher taste. So, here we can see, although apparently it says that they went to perform austerities, but actually what they went to do is to develop their attachment to Krishna. Because attachment to Krishna is the ultimate point of development. All we need to do is to develop our attachment to Krishna. So they started to move towards the west. And while they were traveling to the west, they came across Lord Shiva. They came to a very beautiful place. There was a lake. It was surrounded by beautiful gardens, beautiful flowering trees and flowering trees and fruit trees. The beautiful birds, they were chirping as if they were singing in such a beautiful way. The bees were humming, the beautiful birds were flying, some birds were swimming in the lake, and so then from the lake appeared Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva blessed them. and give them the mantra, chanting the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This section is also very beautiful as Rudra Gita, Lord Shiva's glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this way also we can see that how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because all the great personalities sing His glory, declaring their subordination to Him. Sometimes some people come up with challenging attitude. Oh, Shiva is the greatest. But no matter how much they scream and shout, declaring the greatness of Lord Shiva, but here we can see that Lord Shiva is declaring the greatness of Vishnu. Similarly, Brahma also sang the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, declaring His greatness in Brahma Samhita. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami Tam Ahang Bhajami. I serve you, rendering, expressing my devotion unto you. So this is how the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been established time and time again. So Lord Shiva also sang the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through Rudra Gita. Then Lord Shiva advised them to meditate upon that mantra. Here again, another thing we learn. Meditation must be executed. Meditation must be done through chanting mantra. Meditation is not just sitting down for 5 minutes and breathing heavily but that's what is going on, which is misleading people today. So many meditation centers, yoga centers are coming up, especially in the Western countries, and it's happening in India also. Like, they say that we are going to the yoga retreat. But this is not, yoga retreat is not for 5 days or 7 days. When you go for yoga retreat, then you have to schedule for it at least few years. And their retreat is until you achieve perfection, no matter how much time it takes. And there are yogis who are actually meditating or performing this, practicing this yoga for thousands of years. Still they did not achieve perfection. Yoga is not to control the activities of the, or not to make a healthy body. Yoga is not meant for getting a healthy body or healthy mind or peaceful mind. The purpose of yoga is to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. And it is done through mantra, like we saw Dhruva Maharaj, when Narad Muni advised him to practice yoga, Narad Muni gave him the mantra. Here also, we see when the Prachetas wanted to fix their mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, Lord Shiva gave them the mantra. So the mantra meditation is mantra meditation based on the mantra. And So then Prachina Barhi, the Prachetas, went underwater to meditate, so that there won't be any distraction. To remain outside, there can be so many distractions. So we can see how powerful these individuals were. They're going down, they're going underwater, which means no more breathing. So that means they already accomplished that they don't need to breathe. By practicing yoga, one actually comes to the stage through pranayama, when one literally stops breathing. Rechaka, Puraka and Kumbhaka. These are the three stages, three aspects of breathing. Breathing is not only just inhaling and exhaling. According to yoga, the breathing consists of three aspects. Exhaling, inhaling, retaining. Retain. And that is the most important aspect of yoga, Kumbhaka. Take the breath, give the breath out and stay without breathing. Then again after a few years you take another breath. So this is the and now we can see that these Prachetas were so adept that they could go underwater. And that means they knew the art of not breathing. And we are seeing that, you know, people become accomplished in this culture even nowadays. Like last Kumbh Mela in Haridwar, I was there, and the most popular tent was the tent of the pilot Baba. So there is a Baba, a sadhu, who was a pilot before, and his name is Pilot Baba. And I heard, I didn't go myself, but I heard that he has some students. They are demonstrating that, and there was one Japanese lady. So what they would do, she would go into a trunk. She would go inside a trunk, they lock the trunk up. Then the trunk will be lowered into a pit. And that pit will be covered with earth. And she would stay there for a few days. Or I don't remember whether it's a few days or a few hours, but anyway, it's long. Now, the question is, how could one do that? So this is an art. An art by which they know how to stop breathing. So when you don't breathe for 1 hour, will you need oxygen? You'll need just one lungful of oxygen after 1 hour. So you stay under there for 3 hours, three times you breathe. So this kind of practices are prevalent even now, that there's an art of doing that. Obviously a Japanese lady was not born with this ability. But she cultivated and developed this ability. So Prachetas went underwater. And then the Prachetas started to perform the meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord. And do you know for how long the Prachetas remained underwater? 10,000 years. 10,000 years they remained underwater. So yesterday Ananda was telling me that he has a friend and he finds it difficult to accept these statements in the scriptures. He was telling, he's very intelligent and he is somewhat becoming interested in this, but when he read these books, he finds it very, very unusual, these statements. So, I just told him that, you see, if you go and tell the ants that the human beings do these things, a human being breathes 8 times in a minute, or other human beings breathe in every 10 seconds. What will the ant think? If you tell the ant that the human beings live for 60-70 years at least, what will the ant think, whose lifespan is only few weeks? So similarly, in relation to us, there are some creatures who are far greater than us, and compared to them, we are like ants. Therefore, their activities, like in other ages, the people, the individuals had such ability that they used to live for so long period. Like consider in Treta Yuga, in Dwapar Yuga, the average lifespan was 1,000 years. In Treta Yuga, the average lifespan was 10,000 years. And in Satya Yuga, the average lifespan was 100,000 years. So now you compare 100 in relation to 100,000. In the age of Kali, our lifespan has become considerably short. And our ability also has deteriorated considerably. So that's why, because we cannot do ourselves, then we say nobody can do it. Because we are judging everything from our limited perspective. Atmabat mannati jagat. One judges everything else according to his own experience. Prabhupada used to give the example of a frog in the well. A frog in the well was told about the ocean. So what does the frog know? Frog knows only his well. So he asks, is the ocean twice the size of this well? 10 times the size of the well, 100 times the size of the well. No matter in whichever way he tries to measure or comprehend the ocean in relation to the well, he'll never understand. Therefore, now consider that Mr. Frog, instead of trying to judge the ocean according to the size of the well, if he gave that other friend of his a patient hearing, then probably he could understand what the ocean is like. If his friend told him, and if he listened, that look, my friend, this whale is actually just a small little reservoir of water. But outside the well, there's a vast world. And then you come to the end of that land, and there's a vast tract of water. Then would it be difficult for him to understand? Rather, he'll probably be inspired to get out of the well and see how big the stretch of the land is and how large the ocean is. So that is the intelligent thing to do, and that's what we are expected to do. Don't depend upon your own sense perception. Don't depend upon your limited sense perception, but try to listen from the bona fide source, from authoritative source. And then when you get out of your little shell and see the reality, then you will see yourself, yes, it is real, it is true. So the point is, the Prachetas meditated at the lotus feet, meditated on the lotus feet of the Lord for 10,000 years. Now, in the meantime, Narad Muni took pity upon his father. He felt the sons have become so advanced in spiritual life. But look at the poor father. He is still attached to his mundane sense gratification. He is performing the sacrifices for some petty sense gratification. So Narad Muni went to him. King Prachinabarhi is a great personality also. I mean, he, after all, he is a king hailing from such an illustrious family. Naturally, like that culture was there. So when he saw Narad Muni, he showed respect to him and offered him an elevated seat. Like elevated seat in the sense, the kings, when a saintly personality came, the king would step out of his throne and offer him the throne to sit on. We see that this culture is quite prevalent in India nowadays also. Sometimes when you meet some, go to meet some big people, they get out of their seat and say, "Swamiji, please sit down here." So this is a Vedic culture. One doesn't think, "Oh, this is my throne. Nobody is going to sit on it." No, if there is someone who is more superior, who is more superior to you, who is senior to you, offer him the seat. That's the Vedic culture. As we saw at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, so many great personalities were there, but when Suta Goswami came, the seat was offered to him because he was considered to be the greatest of all in that assembly. Similarly, when Sukadeva Goswami came, even though his father Vasudeva was present there, what to speak of other exalted personalities? The 16-year-old boy was given that seat because he was so exalted. They didn't know who he was, but from his physical features they could make out that this is a very exalted personality. They saw his spiritual status. Although he was naked, looked like a madman. So they recognized. So that is the vision that these great personalities had. They could recognize who is who. And they offered him the seat. And Parikshit Maharaj started to ask him questions. So that is the Vedic culture. So although Prachinabarhi was the ruler of the entire earth planet, but as soon as Narad Muni came, he stood up, offered obeisances, allowed him to sit down in the throne, on the throne. And then Narad Muni asked him about his welfare. And Narad Muni also reminded him that, look, why are you indulging in all these sacrifices for some mundane pleasure, for some material enjoyment? The goal of life is not material happiness. You can see that happiness in this world is transient, temporary. It comes for a while, then it disappears. Instead of happiness comes distress. they cycle in this way. In the material nature, there is no uninterrupted happiness. Happiness and distress cycle. Just as after the day comes night, similarly after happiness comes distress. No matter how much you try to enjoy, there is bound to be distress. And then he also pointed out what would happen eventually. He made him see. He gave him that vision. And he saw that those animals that he killed in the sacrifice, those animals are coming to charge him with weapons. Some animals' horns have become made of steel, sharp as sword. They are trying to gore him. Some animals that have been sacrificed, their claws became razor sharp, and they were just trying to tear him open. Some animals' beaks became so sharp, metallic, as if made of metal. So Prachinabarhi became very much afraid. Then he asked Narad Muni, what shall I do? How can I get out of this? Then Narad Muni told him one story. The story of Puranjan. How many of you remember the story of Puranjan? How many of you think that there is no need to tell the story of Puranjan? Okay, how many of you want to hear the story of Puranjan? Okay, I am inspired. So, Puranjan is a king. King Puranjan. And he was traveling in this material, in this world, in search of enjoyment. And while traveling in this way, Puranjan came across a land on the southern part of the Himalayas. Beautiful place. That place on the southern part of Himalayas is lush green, full of beautiful flowers and fruit trees, beautiful birds, beautiful animals. So Puranjan was very happy to be in such a place, and he kept on traveling. Then all of a sudden he came across a beautiful city. A city with 9 gates. And then there he saw an extremely beautiful woman. And Puranjan fell in love with her just by seeing her. Such a beautiful woman. And he approached her. And she accepted him. She said, I am the queen of this place. And I also was looking for a suitable husband. And now that I have found you, I feel that my life has become successful. And she said, come and stay in my city and let us enjoy together. So this way they tried to enjoy. And they used to enjoy in the city of 9 gates. Of this city, the 5 gates were in the front, 2 gates were on the side, and 2 gates were at the back. And Puranjan was enjoying. Sometimes he would go out hunting, and in this way he was having his fun. And when he'd go away, his wife would become very sad. And when he came back, she would be very upset. Then Puranjana had to pacify her, saying that how much he loves her. And so this way, regular life they were leading, trying to enjoy. And this city was very well protected. It was protected by a serpent with nine hoods. It's a terrible, fiery serpent, and this serpent wouldn't allow anyone to harm the city. In this way, for a long, long time, Puranjana enjoyed, lived in the city. And this city was then attacked by Chandavega, a very powerful personality, with his soldiers. The Gandharvas and Gandharvis. 360 Gandharvas and 360 Gandharvis. So, they attacked the city. And this serpent was very much fighting with the soldiers that Puranjana had in that city. But eventually, after 100 years of fight, they became weak and they succumbed to their attack. And in the meantime, Kalakanya, the daughter of time, came and embraced Puranjana. When this daughter of time came and embraced Puranjana, Puranjana lost all his vitality, all his strength. Then this Chandavega came. Actually, this attack was launched by three personalities. There's a brief description of Kalakanna. Kalakanna, Narad Muni is actually describing to Prachina Barhi. So Prachina Barhi told, Narad Muni told that Kalakanna actually approached him to marry him. So Narad Muni told him that, look, I am not such a good husband. I am not going to make such a good husband. You go to Javanraj, the king of the Javanas. So Kalakanna approached Javanraj with all kinds of promises. And Javanraj also flattered her quite nicely. And then Javanraj told him that, look, you are like my sister. So there is a personality who is suitable to be your husband, that is Prajwara. So then Kalakanna got married to Prajwara. And along with Prajwara and Javanraj, three of them, Kalakanna, Prajwara and Javanraj, attacked the city of Nine Gates. And then Kalakanna embraced Puranjan, and as a result of that, Puranjan became completely weak, lost all his energy, lost all his vitality. And then Chandavega came and captured him, dragged him out of the city and plundered the city, destroyed the city. And Puranjana then, thinking about his wife, with whom he was so much in love, he left his body. And because he left his body thinking about this woman, thinking about his wife, in his next life, he got a woman's body. He became the daughter of the king of Vidarbha. And in course of time, he was married to the king of Pandyadesa. And he was a very virtuous king, very pious. And then they lived their life, and then finally he left his kingdom and he took Vanaprastha. He retired in the forest. So both of them were living together in the forest, and then he left his body. So in the middle of the forest, she is alone, lost her husband with whom she lived together for so many years, whom she loved so much, and now that he is gone, she is lamenting, she is crying. And while crying, she collected the wood from the forest, created the funeral pyre, and after lighting the pyre, she was about to enter into that fire. So at that time, somebody came. He introduced himself as her friend from the past, long past. He says, "I am your friend, my name is Avigyata. And you have forgotten me. And forgetting me, you had been going through all these different bodies, one after another." And this Avigyata reminded her, after telling about her condition that was in this material nature, he reminded about her real goal to be attached to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so after hearing the story, King Prachinabarhi told Narad Muni that, "I know you told me the story for my own benefit, but I could not quite understand why you, what is the real purpose of this story? What is this story all about?" Then Narad Muni told, and that this was actually an allegorical story. And Puranjan is a spirit soul. The city of nine gates that Puranjan came across in the southern part of the Himalayas is the human body. The nine gates are the nine holes in the body through which one tries to enjoy in different ways. Five gates in the front are two eyes, two nostrils, and one mouth. Two gates on the sides are two ears. And two gates at the back are the genital and the anus. So this is the city of nine gates, the human body. And the queen of this city is intelligence, with whom Puranjana got married to. And with his intelligence as his companion, Puranjana was enjoying or trying to enjoy in this city of nine gates. And the city is protected by the five-hooded serpent. Who is that five-hooded serpent? As the five kinds of airs: prana, apana, samana, vana, and udana. With this, this five-headed serpent or five airs, the human body functions. And these airs are protecting the human body from external attacks. The prana vayu is keeping the soul within the body. The apana vayu is excreting the undesirable elements from the body. In this way, five different airs are activating, taking care of different aspects of the functions of the body. Samana vayu is taking care of the digestion. Udana and Vayana. Vayana is taking care of the blood circulation. And Udana is taking care of the nervous system. These are the Ayurvedic informations. The five types of airs are taking care of the functions, different functions of the body. Then Puranjana was living, being protected in this body by this serpent, five-hooded serpent, apparently very powerful. But then he is attacked by Chandavega, death. And along with came the embrace of Kalkanya, the embrace of the daughter of time. When the daughter of time embraces you, then what happens? You become, you lose your vitality. You become old. The body that was so strong and powerful in youth, now with the embrace of Kalakanya, became old and lost all the vitality. And Kalakanna's attack came with prajara, fever, and Javan Raja, the other kinds of defeating elements in that body. And then finally, the body cannot be protected by the five airs anymore. The serpent that was protecting the body becomes weak and defeated. Puranjan is defeated. He is dragged out of his body by the Jamadutas, the messengers of death, soldiers of Chandavega. In his next life, he is born as a woman and he is married to a pious person, very virtuous personality. Lived her life, and then when he died, then this avigyata came. So who is this avigyata? The friend whom Puranjan may have forgotten, but the friend of his, like a true friend, did not forget. He is the super soul. And the super soul guided him towards the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the goal of life. So in this way, then Prachina Varhi understood the mistakes that he was making, and he understood the goal of his life. And then he handed the kingdom. In the meantime, the Prachetas came back, so he handed the kingdom over to them and he retired to the forest. Another example, a king giving up everything, going to the forest. Incidentally, how many of you are ready to accept this vanaprastha order of life? I can assure you that it's not going to be that difficult. You don't have to go to the forest. We'll invite you to accept your vanaprastha order of life in the spiritual sky, in the temples of ISKCON. So how many of you are ready for that? So how many of you are going to sign up right away? Okay. So you can give me your names. and email address. And I'll give you my email address. So whenever you're ready, you can let me know. So that's why I had that Ayurvedic clinic here. So that you'll get perfect treatment. And at least it can extend your life by 10 years. Like this Ayurvedic treatment, they say that it makes you 10 years younger. That means it makes you live for 10 years more. So, ultimately we can't really avoid the nature's law of birth, death, old age and disease. So then briefly I'll go into the another illustrious personality in this line. That is King Rishabhdev. Another incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. King Rishabhdev ruled over this kingdom, the earth planet, for a long, long time. He had 100 sons. Out of them, the eldest one was Bharat Maharaj. After him, this land has been named as Bharatvarsha. India, actually the name of India is Bharatvarsha. How did the name India come? To the foreigners, those who came to this land from the western side, they came to this valley on the river called Sindh. So to them this became known as Indus Valley. That's also a brief history about that. Because it was on the land of the Sindh River, Sindh Valley, the neighboring, the people from the neighboring lands, which was not really that close, that was beyond this Hindu Kush mountain, it was as if this land was being protected by the mountain range, and they could not pronounce ha. They couldn't pronounce sa. Yeah, sa. It was Sindhu River. Narmade, Kaveri, Sindhu. That's in the eastern part, western part of India. And they couldn't call it Sindh, so they pronounce Sa as Ha. So they started to call Sindhu River as Hindu River. And the people who live in that land, they started to identify them as Hindus. This expression Hindu is not a Vedic expression. In the entire Vedas, you don't get the mention of Hindu. It was given by the people from those neighboring lands, the Muslims. And so they also, so whoever came from the west, they started to identify that land first as the land of Sindh, or Sindhu River, the land of Hind, and that's from Hind it came Indus. When the Britishers came, they started to identify that land, this land, as the land of India or Indus. And anyway, so that is how that name India came. But actually the name of this land is Bharatvarsha. And this was named after King Bharat. So, handing the kingdom over to King Bharat, Rishabhdev retired. He left home and he started to wander around. And while he was wandering in this way, being completely absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he lost his external consciousness. He totally lost his body consciousness. And as a result of that, because he was acting, he was functioning on the spiritual platform all the time, his physical activities appeared to be like a madman's activity. And he kept on just wondering. But the thing is, thousands of people started to follow him. Wherever he went, he was like a madman moving around, and lots of people are following him. So he came to a land called Konka and Benka, in the southern part of India. And the king of that place became quite amazed, quite surprised that so many people are following this madman. And he saw that his activities, he was moving around naked, he doesn't have any external consciousness. So he thought, I am a king and nobody follows me like that. So if I behave like him, then people will worship me. So he started to imitate the activities of Rishabhdev. And you know what was the result of that? The result of that was Jainism. Jains are actually coming from this king Arhat. They call him Arihant. Arhat has become Arihant, and later on one personality took up this process when he was contemporary of Lord Buddha, and he started to also, he thought that this culture is very much like what Buddha is preaching, so he presented this culture, and that was Mahavir. So this is how Jainism started. So in this way we can see that actually the root of Jainism is Rishabhdev. They accept that. But they don't go into the essence of that, that is accepting Krishna as the personality of Godhead. Because they are just externally, or rather imitating the external activities of King Rishabhdev, they just started to consider that is their religion, that external activities of Rishabhdev. Anyway, this is also another historical happening. And so King Rishabhdev left home and became an abhudhut. That is a personality who is absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and due to that he lost his external consciousness. Abhudhut means, in simple words, an abhudhut is a transcendental mad person. A person who is mad due to his love for Krishna. Premonmadana. Unmadana means madness. And premonmadana means madness due to his love for the Lord. So Bharat Maharaj became the king. And he also ruled the earth planet for many, many years. And then he left his kingdom. Another example, a king left his kingdom, went to the forest. So we can see how wonderful the Vedic culture is. So from this we learn not to stay at home all your life in your ripe old age, still attached to the family life, still attached to the material aspects of your existence, and then eventually die. No. The proper human culture is retire at a right time. All the attachments that have developed during household life, get rid of these attachments gradually. Being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And that is the way to fulfill the purpose of our existence here, especially when you get the human form of life. Previously this culture was prevalent only in India, but today by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada this culture is available all over the world, and it is happening. People are becoming attracted to Krishna consciousness, and when they're in household life, they're turning their household into a temple, and then eventually they are becoming free from their household attachments and becoming fully involved in Krishna consciousness, moving into a temple. In the age of Kali, it is not possible, it's not practical to move into a forest. It's not possible. We are not used to that kind of, we are not able to take up that kind of life. Therefore, Prabhupada built the temples. Move into a temple. And spend your time reading, chanting, singing. And so Bharat Maharaj is another example who did that. Of course, those days ISKCON temples were not there. Then Bharat Maharaj could move to the temple. And if the temple was there, then probably Bharat Maharaj would have been safer. I mean, he had a terribly dangerous situation. He went to the forest. He was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He was so much so that he was in the bhava stage. He was experiencing the transcendental attachment to the Lord, and as a result of that, he was experiencing this bhava, crying for the Lord, remembering the Lord, his body's hair was standing in ecstasy. He was crying. He was rolling in the ground. But even at that stage, one day when Bharat Maharaj was sitting on the bank of the river and he was meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his meditation broke due to the roar of a lion. When the lion roars, it really sounds like a thunderbolt, continuous thunderbolt. And hearing that roar of the lion, one female deer, became afraid and tried to jump across the river. But she could not. And as a result of that, she had a miscarriage. She was pregnant and the baby deer was born, and this baby was being carried away with the current of the river. So seeing that, Maharaj Bharat rescued the baby deer. And he started to nurse that baby deer, that motherless deer. And while doing that, Bharat Maharaj started to become attached to that deer. And when the deer grew up a little, Bharat Maharaj used to become so attached that when the deer used to go out of his sight, he used to become very much worried that, oh, now what will happen? So there are so many wild, ferocious animals. Will those animals attack the deer? And in this way, instead of thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bharat Maharaj all the time started to think about this deer. And then when the time came for him to leave his body, he left his body thinking about the deer. And as a result of that, he got a deer body in his next life. But although he got a deer body, but he was a Jatishmar. He could remember his past. His soul was so exalted that although it was in a deer body, but it has all the recollections of the past. And he could remember what happened to him in his previous life, that he was a king and he gave up everything, came to the forest in order to absorb himself in the thoughts of the Lord, and now due to his attachment to a deer, he got a deer body. Therefore, this time he was very careful. He didn't want to develop any more attachment. So practically right after his birth, he left his family, his mother. I don't want to risk this. I don't want to develop any attachment anymore. And he would, he came to the ashrams of the hermitage of the saintly personalities, and he would stay there. And when the saintly personalities was discussing Krishna conscious active Krishna katha, he would just sit there quietly and listen. Even as a deer, he would just listen. And then when he left the deer body, then he was born as a son of a brahmana, the youngest son of a brahmana. And here also he didn't want to take any chance. He didn't want to risk it. He just wanted to play safe. Not to develop any attachment, he actually started to meditate upon the Lord, and externally he started to behave like a retarded child. As if he doesn't have any intelligence, as if he doesn't understand anything. Like he started to behave like a retarded child. And his father was very affectionate towards him. And he thought, this brahmana boy, at least let him learn how to chant Gayatri. And the father would try to make him learn Gayatri, and he would pretend as if he can't. He can't even pronounce the words. And so this is how Bharat Maharaj became Jada Bharat. Jada means retarded, inert, as if devoid of intelligence, demented mentality. And so as long as his father was there, at least the father was very affectionate towards him. But when his father died, then his brothers started to treat him badly. He was very strong, so they would make him work hard in exchange of a little food. And sometimes they wouldn't even give him food. So some neighbor would give him some food and make him work hard for them. And this way everybody started to take advantage of Jada Bharat's inertness or lack of apparent lack of intelligence. But Jada Bharat didn't mind. He just, okay, fine. After all, what is there? After all, I am seeing the real appearance of this material nature. The brothers are trying to cheat me. That's how he was seeing. My so-called brothers, they're trying to cheat me of my share of the property. Everybody is trying to take advantage of me. That's what the material nature is. Everybody tries to exploit everybody else. And so Jada Bharat was happy in that way. And people used to take advantage of him. Like all the hard work, heavy work, they would call Jada Bharat, Jada Bharat, can you do this for me? I'll give you some food to eat. Jada Bharat said, okay. And then one night, Jada Bharat was guarding the field. Actually, the paddy fields sometimes get attacked or get trampled by wild animals, especially boars and things. So to keep them away, somebody stays up at night and make sound so that these animals cannot come and destroy the field. Either eat, like the deers would come and eat the crop, boars will come, elephants will come and trample the field. So Jada Bharat was engaged in that activity of guarding the field. And at that time, it was a new moon night, moonless night. And the dacoits on that day, on the new moon day, they offer sacrifices to Kali. Sometimes they offer human sacrifice. A human being is sacrificed for Kali's pleasure to fulfill their material desires. And so they got a person to be slaughtered in that sacrifice, to be offered in the sacrifice. But that guy ran away. Now the time is going away, going out. Somebody has to be offered. So they found Jada Bharat in the field. So they got hold of him. And then they came and bathed him nicely, put him a garland of hibiscus flower. Incidentally, don't offer hibiscus flowers to Krishna. These flowers are meant for Kali. That red hibiscus. So, and they put him into the Jupakashta to be slaughtered. And just as they were about, and Jada Bharat didn't protest. Okay, fine. Maro bhi rakho bhi jo iccha tohara. A perfect example of that. If you want to kill me, so what? After all, it's the body that's going to be killed. I'm not going to be killed. Let me be fixed at your lotus feet. That's the prayer of a devotee. And there's a perfect example we are finding here. They were going to slaughter Jada Bharat, but Jada Bharat was totally surrendered to that situation. He was not trying to protect himself at all. And when they're about to slaughter Jada Bharat to Kali, offer Jada Bharat to Kali, Kali couldn't tolerate it anymore. Piercing her murti, she just appeared there. She picked up the chopper from the hand of that dacoit and she started to chop their heads off. So this is how we can see that how Kali is actually a devotee and she cannot tolerate any misconduct, any offense to his to Krishna's devotees. Okay, Jada Bharat, his attitude is, okay, rakhavi joi chatwara. When it was a Maravi was your Ichha, then I was okay with it. And now that you want to protect me, That's also your desire. So he simply accepted that and he carried on. So he was just wandering around. So in the meantime, a king called Rahugana, he was going to one place, riding on a palanquin. And so one of the palanquin bearers became indisposed. So they were looking for one and they found Jarabharat, strong, powerful looking person. So he said, come, do this job for the king. Now you consider that your life has been successful. You have been offered a job to serve the king directly. Jarabharat said, fine. Now the problem was, when you carry palanquins, the steps has to be in harmony, have to be synchronized properly. Otherwise the palanquin will shake and causing great discomfort. So it's a simple job, and they also sing. Just like the army people, when they march to put the steps together properly, what do they say? Left, right, left, right, left. And so they also sing, humhuna, humhuna, palki chale humhuna. But Jarabharat couldn't keep up the pace, because when he saw some ants, he didn't want to step onto that. He didn't want to kill even an ant. So as a result of that, his steps were not in sync. And it was causing a lot of discomfort to King Rahugana. So he says, stop. And he started to chastise him, you, so and so. He started to blast him like anything. But Jarabhara's response was, who are you addressing? Are you addressing this body or me? And in this way, when Jarabhara started to speak about the difference between the body and the soul, and one's actual identity being the soul, and the addressing the king also, like, who is in discomfort, your body or yourself? The actual discomfort should be being in the situation that you are in, devoid of your connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The king was struck. He was struck with wonder. My God, who this person is? He's a self-realized soul. And he felt very, 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 very sorry about it. And he started to beg forgiveness. Please, please, forgive me. I didn't recognize who you are. I can see that you are a great devotee of the Lord. You are a Vaishnava. And I know the result of Vaishnava aparad. And in this way, he started to lament and beg forgiveness. And then Jarabharat gave him the transcendental knowledge. So another illustrious personality in this line of Dhruva Maharaj. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Thank you very much. But from tomorrow, no clapping. Okay. Why I'm saying it is because I was just thinking yesterday when you clapped. When Prabhupada gave lectures, we never clapped. We never dared to clap. Jamuna Priya Devi Dasi. Jamuna Priya. Okay. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. All glories to your merciful grace. What about Prabhupada? Yeah. always there should be all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for always waking our consciousness. Today's stories were especially stomach churning. The other ones. Yeah. Could you please explain what the origin of the Muslims is, please? Where they come from? Is it from Vena? Where did their philosophy come from? I understand that the Quran mentions descriptions of the beauty of the Lord, although impersonal. Then how is it that the Muslims are so barbaric? Good point, very good point. You see, general understanding is that it is coming from Muhammad. Muhammad got some enlightenment, I think in some mountain, not in Sinai though. Not in Sinai, like where Moses got that enlightenment. We have a god brother who is from the Muslim background, and he's a very amazing personality actually. His name is Ravanari Das. He is from Palestine, but actually their family is from Israel. In Israel there is a place called Akka, and in Akka there is a mosque, very famous mosque, and they are the mullahs of that mosque. That means they are the, you know, priests. His family was the priest of that mosque. So from his childhood he was brought up to become a mullah. And he was very intelligent. And he used to, even as a child, he used to have questions, but he didn't get the answers from them. Rather, they shut him up. Don't ask this kind of questions. Then later on, the family moved to Palestine, the refugees from Israel. They moved to Palestine. And he went to Germany to study. And then when he was in Germany, he came across a Back to Godhead. He told me that he was sitting in a restaurant, and while he was waiting for his food, he saw this magazine. And in this magazine, when he was reading, he found that this personality is saying, if you want to know about God, you can come to me. I can give you all informations about God. I can tell you what He looks like, where He lives, and so forth. So he became very, very impressed, because he saw that there, at least finally, there is somebody who can really give me the informations about God. And so he actually contacted the devotees in Germany, and he got more books, started to read. The more he read, the more convinced he became, and then finally he decided to join the movement. But at that time, I don't know whether you remember, in 1972 Olympics in Munich, there was a massacre of the Israeli participants. The Muslims actually killed many Israeli athletes in the Munich Olympic. And that's why they were kind of, in Germany there's a very big sensitivity about the Arabs. And here is an Arab who wants to join our movement. Our devotees became quite alarmed, and they politely told him that, look, you don't really have to join the temple, you can practice at home. And Ravanari could understand, I mean, what was actually the matter. So don't take any more questions. Anyona, Just keep it. Okay, fine. So he understood. So, and in the meantime, he also knew that there was another temple in Germany, in Berlin. So he asked them whether he could get a dhoti and kurta, the dress that they wear. So they said, yes, you can. So they sold a dhoti kurta to him. And he went, took the dhoti kurta, went to a barber shop, shaved up and put on this dhoti kurta, went to Berlin, and he told them that he is coming from Frankfurt Temple. They sent him there. So that's how he joined. And he's the one who actually translated the Bhagavad Gita into Arabic. I mean, extremely brilliant personality. And he had a thorough understanding of Islam. And once he told me what actually happened was, Muhammad was traveling, and while traveling he came across a person whom he found to be very learned, very wise. So he asked him, where did you get this knowledge from? And so this person actually showed him a scroll. So my knowledge is from here. It was a Torah, Jewish. So according to him, Muhammad killed him and took the Torah. And then he started to speak from the Torah. And that is how it all started. And in a way, it's interesting to note, like I tried to read Quran at one time. The first half of Quran is very wise, very wonderful. But the second half of Quran is terrible. You know, full of bloodsheds. The way Muhammad was establishing the religion. Anyway, so according to his description, this is how Islamism started. But at least one thing we can consider, where did it start? Which people Muhammad was preaching? What kind of people Muhammad was preaching? Muhammad was not preaching to a group of very learned and cultured individuals. He was preaching to a bunch of desert nomads. Those who, for the sake of one bucket of water, they wouldn't mind slaughtering the entire population. And that's why it's not surprising. And though another language that they could understand is the language of the sword. So that's why Muhammad took the sword to establish that religion among them. But unfortunately, the trouble started when that religion came out of the desert and came to the civilized world. For the desert people, that's the perfect religion. But not for the civilized world. Okay, does it answer your question? So, next one is Madhumangal Das. Madhumangal, okay. Krishna tells Uddhava, my devotees are following the dust of my lotus feet. I am following the dust of the lotus feet of my devotees. Please, Maharaj, why Krishna should follow the dust of his devotees' lotus feet? Well, that shows the greatness of Krishna. He is so fond of his devotees that while the devotees are serving him, he is in return serving the devotees because he loves his devotees. Gayatri Devi Dasi. Okay. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. I am a little confused. You say that during the reign of Parikshit Maharaj, there was no meat eating, but King Shantanu married the daughter of fishermen. Were people eating fish? Yes. The thing is that no meat eating means that civilized people did not eat meat. Those people, those who are living by the water, not very advanced, not very cultured, like they would indulge in that. Also, there were hunters, those who would kill animals, but they were not considered to be the civilized, belong to the civilized world. Just like the meat eating was going on, the animals were eating meat. So similarly, animal-like people are eating meat. But they were not considered to be human beings in a real sense. Okay, Mehak Maheshwari. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. In Dhruva Maharaj's story, why Narad Muni didn't tell about Krishna to Dhruva Maharaj and guide him to achieve Krishna? Okay, Mehak, what's the difference between Narayan and Krishna? It's from the internet. If you are watching still, Narayan is Krishna. So he gave him the mantra. What mantra did he give? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So who is Vasudev? So yes, Narad Muni gave Dhruva Maharaj Krishna. Nanda Dulal Das from Richmond. Wow. Another place where early morning. Nanda Dulal, you are still awake. Please accept our humble obeisances at your lotus feet. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I am so unfortunate that I could not hear directly from your lotus mouth, your servant, Nanda Dulal Das. Okay, next year don't... At least you won't have to stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning to listen to this class. Thank you very much, Nanda Dulal. This is from Ravi from Dallas. Hare Krishna Maharaj, do you have a Manvantar avatar now? Yes, this is the Manvantar avatar. This is the Manu of Vaivarshata Manu, and the Manvantar avatar in this age is Vamandev. Ramananda Rai Das, Belgium. Also quite early for you, Ramananda. No, not that early. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for your wonderful classes, Guru Maharaj. Do we discriminate between empowered devotees and Shaktavesh avatar? How do we know? Actually, there is no difference. Prabhupada said, whenever there is an unusual display of power, we have to understand that this is due to Krishna's mercy. So, empowered devotee means Shaktavesh avatar. But again, the other day the question came up whether Srila Prabhupada is a Shaktavesh avatar. And my answer was, yes, he is a Shaktavesh avatar and even more. He is more than a Shaktavesh avatar. Okay. Sunil Mohan, don't mind, yesterday I kind of told you about your handwriting. Actually, your handwriting is very nice. I just joked because in India there is a saying goes like that, a joke like that, that only the compounder can read a doctor's handwriting. And since you're a doctor, I just used that joke. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, we understand that Mahaprabhu has predicted that the holy name will spread to every town and village, implying that Krishna consciousness will predominate in the world. However, how do we rationalize the urgency of demonic movements in Kali Yuga that appears to be progressive at a fast rate than the speed of the holy name, what will their material outcome be? Is that material outcome? What will their eventual outcome be? There will be an eventual outcome. Very good question. So, I mean, you are saying that the Islam is spreading so fast. Now, there is no way of knowing how Krishna will act. So they may, we don't know. Like, we cannot really predict what may happen tomorrow. Like, you know, they may be spreading like that, but if the war breaks out, then, you know, good part of the population will be wiped out. And then probably the mentality of the people also will change. Now people have become so averse to spiritual life. There is no consideration of God. The whole human society has become atheistic. Right? But when some calamity takes place like that, then probably the mentality of the people will change. Another way to look at it is the way you see they are behaving. They are killing themselves. They are killing each other. And also, the world situation is not so good right now. I mean, the way things are, only a handful of people are taking to Krishna consciousness, because people have become so arrogant and so complacent. They think there is no need for God. They have brought everything under control. So that's why there is no consideration of Krishna consciousness. But who knows how Krishna will make it happen? Therefore we simply depend upon Krishna, and He will do something about it. They themselves say that. Yeah. I mean, we are seeing it. But how it will happen, we don't know. And when it happens, it will cause a great turmoil worldwide. Wow. Whose question? Oh, Kirti Kumari. Where is Kirti Kumari? Couldn't you write a bigger one? Okay, dearest Guru Maharaj, let me see. It's a long question. How many questions do you have? Only? Okay. Dearest Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. In this age of Kali, we specially take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has emphasized the Yuga Dharma of the chanting of the holy name. And yet we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. And can this not be a Yuga avatar? What exactly is the relationship between the Yuga avatar and the people of that respected age? And what is the role of a Yuga avatar? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not an avatar, but avatari, Krishna Himself. But he also appeared as the Yuga avatar. The time came for the Yuga avatar to appear, so Krishna decided to come as Yuga avatar. Okay? So that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. But what he is giving, that in other ages the Yuga avatars don't give. Yuga avatars don't give access to Vrindavan. Yuga avatars take them to Vaikuntha. But in this age, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came right after Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving us access to Vrindavan. It's clear? Huh? No, that won't be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He'll be an incarnation of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. Expansion of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, who will establish Yuga Dharma, but not Krishna Prem. He'll come after 1000 Chaturyugas, in the next day of Brahma. So another 8.62 billion years. Do you want to wait for that long? You have explained that Lord Brahma is one of the Gunavatars in charge of the mode of passion. I understand from this that his role mainly is related to the material nature. Yet he is the father of our Sampradaya and is always situated in transcendental knowledge. Lord Brahma worships the residents of Braja, but somehow does not play direct role in Golok Vrindavan as one of Krishna's associates. Yet we see that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, he has been given the position of the Namacharya due to his pure devotion. Acting as a most confidential associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, could you please elaborate a bit on this? Yes, Brahma is a Gunavatar. That is his role, right? In relation to this creation, in this universe. But at the same time, Brahma is a pure devotee. Right? Just like the chairman of the Microsoft, can he become a pure devotee? Microsoft is a very big company. You know that. As a chairman of Microsoft, he is performing one duty. But at the same time, he can be a pure devotee of Krishna. Just like you are teaching in the international school, right? But at the same time, you are a devotee. Then third is, if Bharat Maharaj remembered his past activities in his form of a deer, then why he had to come back as a son of a brahmana? Can we conclude from this that even while being conscious of the Lord in love, one cannot get completely purified in the body of an animal? Yes, to achieve ultimate perfection, one needs to get the human body. Okay. But by the mercy of the Lord, sometimes an animal also can. Just like by coming in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the animals in the forest of Jharkhand became liberated. Shivananda Sen's dog became liberated, went back to Vaikuntha. But there, exceptional cases. Notover Krishna Das, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, today is the first session you mentioned that spiritual world doesn't denote, okay, spiritual world denote dependence and material world denotes independence. Kindly elaborate. Yes, when you are dependent upon Krishna, you are in the spiritual world. When you want to become independent, you stay here. Okay? So what do you want to be? Do you want to depend upon Krishna or want to be independent? Very good. So then you'll become situated in the spiritual world. Ananta Prem Das, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories unto your lotus feet. I would like to know why Parashuram as a Shaktavesh avatar is seen as one of the dasavatar of Lord Krishna, because Saktavis avatars also have been included in dasavatar, just like Parashuram here. Bhakta Mark Radhadesh, yeah. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Before we start chanting our rounds on the mala, we need to take shelter of Shri Panchatattva. While doing so, are we supposed to be holding on to the head bead or not? I don't know where this culture is coming from, because the other day also that same question came up. Yeah? Like somebody asked the question, holding on to the head bead. No, you don't touch the head, the crown, because that's Radha Krishna. Don't go past that, or just go there, stop and chant back. Another thing is that, not that after every round you have to chant Panchatattva Mahamantra. You can do that, there is no harm. But generally, what understanding I have from Srila Prabhupada is you start the Mahamantra, you start chanting the Mahamantra, taking shelter of Panchatattva. Then you continue to chant, round after round. Go to the end, then come back, another in this way. Take the mic. What to explain?
What do we do with our fingers? Are we falling into the first beat of the rounds?
Yeah, when you start chanting, you don't have to count Panchatattva Mantra. You just say it and then start counting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? Okay. Mithilesh. Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj, being the son of Lord Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality, and that of being situated in Bhava stage, Bharat Maharaj fell down and couldn't achieve spiritual success in that life. So is this story not demotivating for us to practice Krishna consciousness, as we are not even perfect at Shraddha stage? On the other hand, you have to understand that in this age, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave, he never gave it to anybody before. So this is the special prerogative. What you got from Srila Prabhupada, even in Satya Yuga people didn't get that. Now what are you going to do about it? Take it or leave it? Okay, good. Take full advantage of it. Chitta Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Dhanyavad Pranam. Thank you very much. In India, the Lord of Dharma, the land of Dharma, people are killing each other in the name of religion, and the leaders are helping to pollute the atmosphere rather than improving. So my question is, that is it when some devotee becomes a leader, gets power, they will play a significant role in spreading Krishna consciousness? Question from previous session. Yeah, India is a land of dharma, right? But in the Kali Yuga, everything turns upside down. Even the lamps burn with the wick downwards. Usually in other ages, they used to light lamps. And what the lamp wick was like? It was up. But in this age, how does the lamp burn? So this is